two. We had already quoted this, but we said that the purpose of the study, the solar pilot study, was to, quote, evaluate the viability of rooftop solar and its ability to offset utility infrastructure upgrades. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you know that through firsthand knowledge?
Yes.
Okay. And did you personally select the team used for this study?
For the rooftop solar study?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
And did the team include any engineers?
Yes, it did.
Okay. But this was a GIS team.
It was a cross-department effort using our GIS gurus who look at the geospatial data that can be used for this kind of a study. He used our engineers who are very familiar with distribution engineering as well.
Okay, but in terms of who prepared the study, it's just listed as three of the GIS personnel. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And I think you would agree that GIS folks are pretty good at, you know, mapping available rooftops and accounting for spatial factors like shading.
Our guys are very good at it.
Mm-hmm. And this, you'd stand by with, I think, a lot of confidence that the solar output modeling was good and accurate.
Yes.
Okay. Now, was the purpose of the study to specifically evaluate the ability of the model solar to offset upgrades to the Northeast 16 circuit?
This study was, yes, with the intent to extrapolate that to a wider group.
Okay. Well, I've distributed a during the break a second exhibit, and I would ask that be just marked and identified this time.
This one? That one?
Be marked as, thank you. Be marked as TASC cross exhibit 2.
And again, Mr. Marks, you would be familiar with Smart Grid annual reports?
Yes.
Imagine? Okay. So let's take a look at just a few spots in this document. So if you turn to the second page of the exhibit and step down to the third paragraph, it says, PacifiCorp has performed studies to evaluate potential sites for solar installation and continues to work with customers, city officials, and other stakeholders interested in connecting distributed generation systems to the company's electric grid. And you would agree that the Smart Grid solar pilot study in your testimony is one of those, just one study, right?
Yes.
And would you agree that this copy of the Smart Grid solar study in your testimony is a full representation of the study prepared by the company?
It's a representation of the study.
Okay. And does the study, as it is attached to your testimony, address a discussion of the cost of solar panels?
Not the study itself.
Okay. Is there more than one study related to the Northeast 16 circuit that was conducted by the Smart Grid Group?
In regards to solar or just in regards to system upgrades?
In regards to the per stated purpose of this study, which is to look at the ability to offset upgrades.
This was the only solar study looked at Northeast 16. There are other studies that looked at the load growth in the area and that require remediations for that load growth.
Okay. So we step down another paragraph. The report provides more detail on this single study. It says PacifiCorp performed a detailed study on a distribution circuit in Salt Lake City to determine the viability of distributed solar generation in an urban setting. The evaluation included identifying the percentage of rooftops within the study area that were viable for solar panel installations, total project costs to install the solar panels, and the required metering infrastructure.
Yes.
And so I read that correctly. Does this sound like an accurate description of the study goals and methods that you described?
Of that, okay, let me make sure I understand. If you're referring to this study,
mm-hmm.
okay, This study didn't go into the cost. After this study, we started looking at the cost. We started looking at the applications. So that study in and of itself did not. We used that study as a springboard to perform other analysis in the area. Mm-hmm. And thus the chart we used when we started looking at circuit loading.
Okay. And the study you just held up has several appendices that give some data on how the study was, the assumptions used and the numbers used in the study. Is that correct?
Correct.
And for this other, I guess, analysis you state, is any data or supporting information given in the record for that?
I don't believe so, no.
Okay. So turning to the next page of the cross-exhibit, there's a figure which should be familiar to everyone. And this is titled Figure 6. And this is substantially the same chart that appears in your rebuttal testimony with a few changes to the text. Would you agree?
Yes.
And would you agree if you flip to the next page and two pages, or actually strike that, it would be the seventh page of the cross-exhibit, that this same chart appears in the 2014 Smart Grid report?
Yes.
And do you still oversee the compilation of these reports?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Now, turning to the last bit of this exhibit, it's the Smart Grid Annual Report for 2012, which is dated June 29th, but I believe for locating this in that in a docket, it would, I think this was a correction that was later filed. And so you would agree on this last page, this is, again, the same chart that appears in the 2012 update.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it. It's okay. The same chart we've been using, yes.
Okay, and are you aware of whether this was submitted to the commission and whether comment was provided by parties on this?
I know the report was filed with the commission, and I know the report that there were comments filed on it, yes.
Okay, do you recall whether the office filed comments?
I do not recall who all filed comments, no.
Okay. Do you recall any party raising the question of whether this study submitted any evidence of cost of metering or cost to the utility?
I don't recall that, no.
Okay. So let's turn back now to page 2 of your rebuttal, starting with line 41, where you state that we selected a single distribution circuit located near the University of Utah campus in Salt Lake City, Utah, for the study. This area has a very modest annual load growth of 2% and was an ideal candidate as it has a diverse mixture of residential and commercial customers. So when you say this was an ideal candidate for the study, are you saying that it was a good case study that could be relied upon to form company-wide policy?
Yes, it could be relied upon to form the basis, yes.
Okay, so in other words, would the results of a study on this circuit be informative to the company on a broader basis as it looked at the question of deferring upgrades?
Yeah, I think we could use it for that purpose.
And would the relevant criteria for that circuit be looking at when the circuit experiences its peak demand?
Again, there's some variability amongst the circuits depending on the customer mix. You know, you look at this specific circuit with this mix of residential and commercial, it may not be representative of a circuit that's 100% industrial or commercial or one that's largely populated with residential.
And in your estimation, would this area, the study area, be one that is heavily populated residential?
It's pretty heavy, yeah. It's not, yeah, it's pretty heavy.
And would you accept, subject to check, that according to U.S. Census data, it's the zip code where the study area is included is the most dense in terms of population in all of Utah?
Yeah, I'll accept that.
Okay. And do you still characterize that study area as typical of the system?
Typical as far as rooftop solar production goes, yes.
And would you agree that the study you held up, that's in your testimony, that it does not identify the amount of solar production that would need to occur at the time of circuit peak to offset infrastructure upgrades.
Can you say that one again?
So the study does not identify a target number for solar production that would have actually offset an upgrade on that
side. Oh, no, it does not.
Okay. And would you agree that the, quote, viability of using solar to offset upgrades would involve an analysis of the cost of installation versus the benefit it produced?
I'm not sure how to answer the question, because where I look at a distribution circuit, I'm looking at the peak loading requirements. I'm not looking at the energy production of a solar panels. And even on this circuit here, if I was to take these panels and tilt them to the west to maximize the offset of peak demand, it's not significant enough to change my design parameters. So I'm not sure how the energy plays into this.
But you would agree that the only information about circuit peak in the study is figure 8. Yeah, so we're back just to the study that's in the record here.
That's the only chart that shows contribution to circuit peak.
Okay, and does that show that solar production is minimal at the precise hour the circuit peaked on August 2, 2010?
It does.
In the solar study, let's see. So looking on page 13,
I'm sorry, page 13.
I'm sorry, it's page 13. Yeah, I'm sorry. Let me be specific there. Page 13 of the solar study, which is attached to your testimony as DLM 1R. So the last paragraph says, however, distribution system peaks do not occur on the same day as solar insulation peaks. And would you agree that the chart, the figure under there shows days and not hours?
Yes, that's the annual load curve for that circuit.
But it says the distribution load peaks occur on or about August 2nd, 2010.
Correct.
And that the peaks usually occur within 2 weeks. But does it give an hour that those peaks occur?
It does not.
Okay. So are you aware of, or maybe you have already indicated you're aware of this other analysis, but can you provide a little more detail on when that analysis occurred that looked at the actual hourly peak information of that circuit?
When did we do the analysis to compare it with the circuit?
Mm-hmm.
We did it roughly the same time we actually did the report itself.
Okay, but that was not included in
it was not report. Included in the report.
I mean, so
we talked that it occurs on August 2nd. We were not specific on the hour that it hit.
Okay. And so is it your opinion that the solar output model that has come up was determined here is only relevant to that circuit, or is it relevant company-wide?
The solar output for that circuit is the same across Utah. I mean, it's dependent on the daylight availability in the different geographic areas in Utah, and that only varies plus or minus 10 minutes east to west in the state.
Okay, so would this model be helpful in verifying similar analyses on other circuits?
Yes, it would be, because you can see the best case solar is in the middle of the day.
Okay, and if solar could be shown to have a strong correlation with, let's say, 9 out of 25 circuits, might that be something that would be worth studying more?
Yeah, if we could find that.
Okay. Would you recommend that the company undertake this kind of analysis when it does its load research later, as indicated in this proceeding?
I don't think I can make that recommendation one way or the other, because you're talking about an area of load research that's used in general rate making that I'm not real familiar with how they do those samples and selections.
Okay. But would this be the kind of analysis that would be relevant and potentially useful to look at in a cost-benefit analysis of the entire net metering program.
Yeah, sure.
And would you agree that if solar does correlate well with specific circuits or substation peaks, that even the smallest net metering system provides some reduction?
It provides, I'll agree with that on the basis that you assume, that you consider the fact that it's not available 100% of the time, nor 100% of the time when my system may peak on a cloudy day.
And if you added up all known solar on a circuit or substation, you would be able to estimate the potential reduction when all things are working?
You could.
Okay. So let's back up just for a minute. I think I'm able to trim this down quite a bit. So I appreciate you helping with that. So on page 3, your rebuttal. See, starting around line 56, you describe how this study came about in response to an upgrade project at Northeast Substation.
Mm-hmm.
And does the company's analysis show solar contribution to peak at Northeast Substation?
In best case solar, it does.
Okay. Do you happen to know if the when measured at the substation level that the peak occurs at the same time, or is it possibly earlier in the day?
It's going to be really close. I don't know. I don't have the substation data with me to tell you exactly what it is, but there's an interesting point there when you bring up the measurements at the substation level. Is you're talking about four individual circuits coming off of this.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about the contribution. The mix on all of those are going to be relatively the same because they're in the same geographical area. So I would say the contribution at that level is going to be about the same, and the circuit peak is going to be the substation peak is going to be relatively the same time as well.
Okay. And if this were a circuit that was, I think, of more mixed load, so if, say, two of the circuits were heavily commercial, that's going to kind of shift that substation peak earlier in the day, won't it?
It could shift it. I'm not going to say if it's earlier or later in the day without the precise data. It depends on the load characteristics of those commercial customers.
Sure. I would agree with that. Okay. I think I just want to hit one last point. You mentioned, let me find it in your testimony. This is responding to something you said earlier. So let me find it. Okay, on page 7 of your rebuttal, a question is asked on page 135 that what other experience does Rocky Mountain Power have with large penetrations of solar or other renewable resources? And you give a couple of anecdotes from Oregon, is that correct?
That's correct.
And so these are, would you consider these fairly large systems, 500 kW and 363 kW?
Yes, they are large systems.
Okay, and are you aware what the average residential net metering system is as established by the record?
I remember reading it. I don't remember the precise number. Okay. It's pretty small.
All right. Ballpark of 2 to 3 kilowatts. When they're, okay.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And do you recall answering, and maybe you can say if you did answer this data request from TASC that asked about this, these two examples?
Yes, I did answer a data request.
Okay, you know what, might as well, I think it might be helpful if I just go ahead and hand this out as another cross-exhibit. I know portions of it are in the record already, or are already attached as an exhibit to Sir Rebuttal, but I'll go ahead and hand this out.
Off the record.
Okay. Careful. Those two.
On the record.
Okay, great. So I guess it might be helpful to have two things in front of you. One would be your rebuttal on page 7, and if you could turn the exhibit just handed to you to task data request 11.
I wasn't given an exhibit.
Oh, you weren't? I'm sorry.
My fault.
Okay, I have them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Just to be clear, we're talking about data request 2.11. Is that?
Yes, data task data request 2.11.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay. So on line 139 of your rebuttal, let's start there. You say Pacific Power has incurred the cost of replacing distribution system transformers to accommodate the increasing numbers of levels of NEM customers in its service territory. Primary reason for the need to replace transformers was the absence of a primary neutral connection on the existing transformer. Okay, and in Data Quest 2.11, task asks the question, is replacing the transformer with no primary neutral connection required in each of those jurisdictions? And to which you answered yes. Is that correct?
Yes.
And then when asked what levels of NEM penetration does Pacific Power have in Oregon, California, Washington, you provided a table below which shows Oregon has 1.3% of as a measure of capacity as a percentage of system peak demand. California is at 1.9 and Washington is at 0.2%. Do you happen to know what the current penetration is for Utah for net metering customers as a measure of peak demand?
I do not know that.
Okay. And then in question C or subpart C of 2.11, it's asked, if a transformer replacement is required to accommodate an interconnection of a NEM system, does the customer or the utility pay the cost of replacing the transformer? And please answer for each of Pacific Power's jurisdictions. And you answered for each that the customer does pay for the transformer upgrade. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And is that also the case in this jurisdiction, that interconnection customers will pay the cost?
If a transformer upgrade is required, yes.
Okay. And just one last question in terms of voltage regulation. Is this something that could be addressed in IEEE standards that are being developed for smart inverters?
It's addressed in IEEE 1547 right now. Oh, it's addressed right now in IEEE 1547.
But currently, smart inverters are not included in that for use. Is that correct?
That's correct.
But that process is ongoing.
It is.
And the company is keeping itself informed when this might change.
Yes, we are.
And would you agree that when this becomes a reality and smart inverters could be used, that some of these voltage problems are not going to exist anymore?
I can't agree to it because I'm assuming in that context, I would have to assume that the customer's equipment is operating as intended, and I don't have to put in any kind of conditions for the eventual problematics we saw. That's the, like you said, the anecdotal evidence we gave in the state of Oregon was that failure of customer equipment that caused problems on my distribution system that we needed to mitigate.
Sure. So that's just maybe a price of doing business, right? We expect things to fail every now and then at a small percentage.
Yeah, you do expect things to fail. and they do fail.
So let's see if smart inverters could provide a benefit in that regard. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think smart inverters can provide a benefit.
And do you have any projections of when or what level of penetration Utah would need to see before you're going to have the same problems you've identified anecdotally here in Oregon?
No, I have no projections on that.
Okay, so it's possible that by the time Utah reaches significant penetration, the landscape has changed and smart inverters are commonplace.
It's possible, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you. I have no further questions.
Okay.
Ms. Roberts, your witness.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Mr. Marks.
Howdy.
I'd like to ask one follow-up question relating to task cross exhibit number 3, which I believe you still have in front of you. That's the data requests.
Let me just note for the record, I haven't marked it. Do you intend to offer it, Mr. Colley?
Sorry, Ms. Commissioner. I would like to have that marked. Sorry.
We'll mark it as TASC cross exhibit 3. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Excuse me, Your Honor. I do not believe Mr. Colley has submitted any of these into evidence. He's just...
Not yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Would the Commissioner prefer that I do that now, or is that commonplace to do at the end of the witness's testimony?
I think now is entirely appropriate. You've concluded your cross, so do you offer all three of them into evidence? And
I would move to have all three exhibits marked 1, 2, and 3 into the evidence.
Right. Any objections?
Yes, Your Honor, I do have an objection as to, I believe, cross-exhibit 1 and 2. The reason being is that, for example, if you look at his cross-exhibit number 2, there are numerous pages to these smart grid reports that are missing. I believe there's a page here, number 59. If he provides the entire studies, I would have no objection. But otherwise, I have an objection to just pulling out a few excerpts, given that anything that is offered that is not in its full entirety could be taken out of context. And the same thing with his cross-exhibit number 1, I believe. I note for the commission that several pages are missing, and I'm not sure that Mr. Colley asked any questions in regards to the minutes that are attached to that cross-exhibit number 1. And so those would be my objections. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Colley?
I would certainly concede anything I did not use on cross be included. But it was as a convenience. These are voluminous documents that are filed in the commission's docket website, which I could provide links to those if that would be acceptable.
I think that depends on your purpose, but if you're intending for the commission to consider those aspects of the documents that you used in cross-examination exclusively, then we can receive them on that basis. Is that acceptable? Is that your intent?
Yes, Commissioner.
Okay. And so we'll consider only those portions that were addressed by the witness and the counsel. And those they'll be received in evidence for that purpose.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Ms. Roberts.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Referring to task exhibit 3, which is the data requests, and back to the company's response to task data request 2.11 and the table showing the net metering penetrations for Oregon, California, Washington.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Colley asked you whether you knew what Utah's penetration was on this same criteria as listed in this table, and you weren't sure of that answer. Do you know how it compares to the level of net metering penetration in these states? Is it lower? Is it higher?
I really don't know, to be honest with you, if it's lower or higher. I don't know what the total, what you have to look at is the total nameplate rating of all the systems installed that we have record of, which I don't have at my hands here.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. You use the phrase conventional rooftop solar several times in your rebuttal testimony. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by conventional?
To me, that's rooftop solar that's installed on the same plane as the angle of the rooftop on which it's installed, and to maximize the annual energy production of that panel. So
would unconventional rooftop solar be installed to perhaps be west-facing, maximize peak coincidence?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. I also have questions for you relating to the solar pilot study, which you and Mr. Culley were discussing and is attached to your testimony. The distribution circuit highlighted in that study, was it selected due to the need for the substation upgrade, or was it selected because of the characteristics you mentioned, the modest annual load growth, and so on?
It was selected because of the response from the citizens and the city in that area stating that rooftop solar would completely eliminate the need for a transformer upgrade, and so we wanted to either prove or disprove that theory.
Okay. On page 2 of your rebuttal testimony, you do say that this area has very modest annual load growth of 2%, correct?
Yes.
But you also state on page 3 that the on line 56 of your rebuttal testimony that there was a need for a substation expansion to address load growth.
Correct.
So there was despite the modest load growth in the area, there was a need to expand the substation?
Yes.
And do you recall, because I don't think it's referred to in that study, how many years out the substation upgrade was anticipated to be required?
It was an immediate need.
An immediate need. Okay. And the substation involved in this study was the Northeast substation?
Correct.
Is that correct? Okay. And does that substation serve other circuits besides this circuit that is discussed in your exhibit?
Yes, it does.
How many other circuits?
I believe 3.
3. Are they also primarily residential circuits?
As I recall the area, they're indicative of each other, yes.
Okay. Thank you. So the objective of this solar pilot study was to figure out whether you could install enough solar to avoid the substation upgrade, correct?
Yes.
And you, as part of that study, did your GIS gurus give any consideration to orienting, to unconventional solar, to orienting the panels toward the west?
In the initial study, we did not, but subsequent to that, we've done preliminary estimates that show what would happen if we did tilt those to the west.
Are those preliminary estimates part of the record in this case?
They're included in my rebuttal testimony on page 6.
So I see where that's discussed in your testimony on page 6, but are there any exhibits documenting the company's evaluation of the different orientation of the panels?
No, I did not submit any exhibits.
Okay. Thank you. On page 4 of your rebuttal testimony, there's an unnumbered exhibit, which you and Mr. Culley were discussing earlier. And this figure shows a peak reduction of 7%, correct?
With best case solar, yes.
Okay. Can you please direct me where in the exhibit to your rebuttal testimony this 7% figure is calculated?
I don't show the calculations for it.
Are the data that one would need to recreate the 7% number available in the exhibit to your testimony?
We have that data available. It is not in the exhibits.
Okay, and that data is not available anywhere else in their record for this matter?
Not that I'm aware of.
Thank you. You mentioned that the load growth of the circuit was about 2% per year. Was that load growth in the peak or the overall load growth? Do you recall?
We measure load growth at the peak because that's how I size my system.
Okay. Thank you. At this time, I'd like to introduce an exhibit. Derek, can I get you? Oh, yeah, you guys share. Derek, please make sure the witness gets a copy. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thanks.
I'd like to mark this document Sierra Club Cross Exhibit Number 1. And Mr. Marks, will you please let me know when you've had a chance to review the exhibit?
Okay. Will
you please describe this exhibit, Mr. Marks?
It's a data request from, looks like, the OCS to Rocky Mountain Power.
Okay. And have you seen the spreadsheet that's included in this exhibit before?
I have not, no.
Okay. Looking at that spreadsheet and the preceding text of the data request. The data included in the spreadsheet provides information for various substations in Rocky Mountain Power system and gives the peak date and time that for each of those substations, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And I'd like to turn briefly if you could, these substations are listed in alphabetical order. If you could turn to the northeast substation, which is, I apologize that the pages aren't numbered, but I believe it's about 5 or 6 pages in.
Okay.
Okay. The northeast substation, and the column headers have not carried over here, so this may require a bit of flipping back. Take your time, but when did the peak occur on the northeast substation in the summer of 2013?
It states on July 1st, 2013 at 1600 hours.
And 1600 hours is 4 p.m., correct?
Yes.
So this is the substation that corresponds to the circuit in your solar pilot study that's attached to your testimony?
Yes.
So the 4 p.m. peak for the substation is several hours earlier than the peak for the circuit. That is shown in the figure in your rebuttal testimony on page 4, correct?
In 2013, the substation was higher than the peak was in 2010, yes.
The peak hour was?
I'm sorry. It shows the substation peak in 2013 was earlier than the circuit peak was in 2010.
Thank you. That's correct. These are different years of data. Why might the substation peak occur earlier than an individual circuit peak?
The loading characteristics of the substation, there's numerous factors, customer usage, daily temperatures, et cetera, what preceding days' heating looked like.
Could you please describe the impact of loading on the other circuits and how that combines with the load from the circuit that you studied to give you the substation distribution peak?
The power transformer is metered separately and independently of the circuits. So it's just coincidental data that you see at the substation level.
Okay, thank you. So your study showed that the maximum solar production reduced the peak load by 7%, correct?
On that day, yes.
On that day. And earlier we discussed that the increase in peak load growth on that circuit was 2% per year?
Correct.
So wouldn't a 7% peak reduction offset over 3 years' worth of load growth, of peak load growth for that circuit?
Yes, it would defer for about 3 years.
So you could defer an upgrade for 3 years based on a 7% reduction in general?
Yes, if you had a 7% reduction, yes. Okay. And it was available all the time.
Starting on page 4 of your rebuttal testimony, you discuss a study that you undertook or the company undertook in an effort to validate the model. I'm going to refer to this as the interval meter study.
Okay.
Did the company write up the results from the interval meter study?
There was no specific report on it. What we looked at was just to see where our assumptions for the peak time of energy usage, did it validate what we saw in the model?
Okay.
And solar production, yes.
Okay. And you state, this is on beginning on line 80, that we installed interval meters on several NEM customers to measure their total solar production,
mm-hmm.
energy delivered to Rocky Mountain Power, and energy received by the customer from Rocky Mountain Power. How many customers were involved in this interval meter study?
Seven.
Seven customers. And were these customers on the same circuit?
No, they were not.
I should clarify my question. Were they on the same circuit as each other?
No, they were not.
They were, okay. Were any of them on the circuit profiled in the solar pilot study?
No.
But this interval meter study was designed or intended to validate the results of the solar meter study?
Yeah, to validate our assumptions in the output, yes.
Okay, were the seven customers all residential customers?
They were.
Okay. And how did you select those seven customers to be included in the study?
We based on when they were putting in their rooftop solar system so that we could work with their electrical contractor to get the production meter installed at the same time. Mm-hmm. We did not go back and do any retrofits.
Thank you. In selecting those seven customers, did you make any effort to ensure that they were somewhat of a statistically valid sample of your net metering customers?
No.
So they could have had much larger or much smaller solar panels installations than your other customers?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Okay. And do you remember, you do discuss, beginning here on page 5 of your rebuttal testimony, the data for when their system's production peaked and when their consumption peaked, correct?
Yes.
One thing that's not in your testimony, and I'm wondering if you recall this, is what their contribution was at the system peak. You know, you give this 7% figure relating to the other study, and I'm wondering if there's a similar data regarding the percentage contribution to peak for those seven customers from this study.
I don't remember calculating that. What we were looking at was when does their peak occur?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all we were looking at.
Okay. So it's possible that those customers' solar production at the time of peak could have offset 80%.
No.
It's impossible.
Not 80% at peak.
More than 7%?
Yeah, there was a few that would give you more than 7.
Okay. But these data aren't part of the record.
No, they're not, because like you said, they're not statistically significant. We just used it as a benchmark measure, a bellwether meter, as per se, to see what we could get, to make sure our assumptions were accurate, which they were.
Does the company have any plans to install, to do further interval meter studies?
We actually do that all the time as part of the load research data, and I mean, we do break that out according to customer class, industrial, residential, commercial. If there's a rate tariff for a customer class, we generally do a study to make sure that it's valid, it's statistically significant, and it's valuable and interesting. I did bring the chart for the residential load study for the test case with me, just because it was of interest when it showed the residential peaks on the Utah residential load curve. So,
how many customers have interval meters? How many net metering customers have these meters installed now?
I don't know the true number. I know we quit collecting data on the 7 that we had installed for my purposes.
Okay. So data are available from the company relating to total generation, total consumption from some number of customers.
For a finite period of time. Like I said, we quit collecting the data after we validated our model.
The meters are still operational on those residences?
I don't know if they still are or not.
Okay, thank you. I have a few more questions relating to Sierra Club Cross Exhibit number 1. And this relates to a response that you gave to Mr. Cully's question earlier about the variation in when different substations peak.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just like, let's just turn to the first page of this actual spreadsheet, beginning with substation 106th South.
Okay.
And these substations are listed in alphabetical order, so I haven't manipulated this spreadsheet in any way that you can discern, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Could you go down the list for the first, say, half of this page and just indicate the times that each of these substations peaked? And if you could convert to the 12-hour clock for the rest of us in this room, that okay. might help. So just read off a dozen or so of the peak times for the substations.
And you want them in order. So we have 4 p.m., 4 p.m., 3 p.m., 6 p.m.
That's 4 p.m., isn't it?
1,800 hours.
6 p.m. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were on the next line. My apologies.
Yeah, 1,800 hours is 6 p.m.
Absolutely.
Then we have 4 p.m., 4 p.m., 5 p.m., 4 p.m., 4 p.m. We skip a couple, 4 p.m., 1 p.m., 5 p.m., 6 p.m.
Okay. Thank you. Now, the circuit that you studied in the solar pilot study that you and Mr. Cully were discussing, and that's mm-hmm. attached to your exhibit, that circuit peaked at approximately 7 p.m., correct?
The circuit did in 2010, yes.
The circuit in 2010 peaked. That peak time is later than all of the other substation peak times that you just read off this exhibit, correct?
Of the ones I read off, yes. I haven't read the entire list, though, so I can't speak to the list as in its entirety.
Of course, but
I'm sure you've looked at it.
Is it fair to say that the 7 p.m. peak time on that circuit is not necessarily representative of all of the substation distribution peaks on your system?
I think it's fair enough, yeah.
It's fair enough?
Like I said, I haven't looked at the entire list, so I don't know how it comes in.
Okay. But you're confident that based on that single study, you can say that there are no distribution reduction benefits for your entire system based on the study of that one circuit?
Right. Remember, I'm not relying just on the fact that it's a 7% reduction at that hour of the day. We also look at the availability of that. I have to size for the demand peak that will be seen on that circuit at any time of the year, so that I can maintain my voltage, that I can maintain the customer's energy demands. That's what I'm designing for, is the peak mm-hmm. of the system. So if that solar system is not contributing at the time of the peak, or the time of the peak shifts when solar production is not available, that's what I have to size my distribution network. I can't size it based on energy reductions. It doesn't work.
But your study did show a 7% energy reduction on that day.
On a best case solar, assuming every rooftop in that area had solar production on it. Now, you know, if you want to look at that as a mandate and say that every customer on that circuit must have it, that's what we are basically referring to in that study.
Okay. The company's requested net metering facilities charge is not based on any estimates of the cost of adapting the electrical grid to handle export from net metering customers, correct?
I really don't know what's all embedded in that cost request.
Okay. Have you quantified any cost to the utility of adapting the grid to handle distributed generation?
Not for Rocky Mountain Power. As I've said, we don't have the level of penetration that would require that yet. But talking to other utilities and seeing the challenges that they face, we know there will be some challenges with that.
Mm-hmm. Considering the current growth in net metering customers, has the company estimated how many years it has before it reaches the penetration level experienced by these other utilities?
I have not, no.
Okay, thank you. No further questions.
Ms. Hayes.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Marks. I just have a very few questions. You've mentioned several times this morning that you size your system for demand. And your estimates of demand don't differentiate based on the attributes of specific customers, do they?
Our load studies will give you that information, yes. It can tell you, but we don't on individual circuits break it down by that category, no.
Okay. And do your studies assume a diversity of load, that is, that not all appliances will be on at the same time?
Yes.
Okay. And then the residential distribution peaks are different from system peak. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
And then at... let's see. At higher penetrations of solar, would storage or demand response possibly help facilitate the integration of higher penetrations of solar?
Storage will.
But not demand response?
Demand response would be impartial to the source of the energy.
Okay. Thank you. That's all.
Redirect, Ms. Hogle.
I don't have any. Thank you, Your Honor.
Questions? Thank you, Mr. Marks. You're excused.
All right. Thank you.
Is it possible to ask follow-up questions?
No.
You know, redirect, is that what it's called?
Well, redirect is for the counsel that is sponsoring the witness, typically. So. Okay. But, Ms. Roberts, did you have something you...
It's a matter for the commission. I would simply like to move that Sierra Club Cross at number one be moved into the record.
Any objections? And again, we'll receive these for the matters that were addressed by counsel with the witness. Thank you. Your next witness.
The company calls Ms. Joelle Stewart.
Please raise your right hand. Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you. Please be seated.
Can you please state your name and place employment for the record?
My name is Joelle Stewart. I'm the Director of Pricing, Cost of Service, and Regulatory Operations for PacifiCorp.
And as a witness in this case, did you prepare rebuttal and surrebuttal testimony in phase two in this case?
Yes.
with exhibits?
Correct.
And do you have any changes at this time?
No.
Off the record. We good? I hope that wasn't an intentional departure. Good. We're on the record. Go ahead, Mrs. Hogle. Thank you.
And so if I were to ask you the questions in those two pieces of testimony again here today, would your answers be the same?
They would.
The company moves for the admission of the rebuttal and surrebuttal testimony with exhibits of Mr. Will Stewart.
Objections? They're received.
Ms. Stewart, do you have a summary for the commission today?
I do.
Please proceed.
Thank you. This summary encompasses my rebuttal, well, my direct, my rebuttal, and my surrebuttal testimony in support of the company's net metering facilities charge. Rocky Mountain Power is proposing to implement a net metering facilities charge of $4.65 per month for recovery of costs related to the distribution system and customer services. The facilities charge is in addition to the $6 monthly customer charge agreed to in the stipulation for all residential customers. Alternatively, the company is agreeable to recovering these facilities costs through a charge based on the installed facility size for each installation. This was the approach that was proposed by the Office of Consumer Services. The company calculates this charge at $1.55 per installed kW. The proposed charge is applicable to only residential net metering customers. The calculation of the charge is shown in my exhibit RMP_JRS-1R. The need for the charge is due to the residential rate structure in which a significant portion of the fixed costs are recovered through energy charges. As a result of this structure, when net metering customers reduce their usage and receive a kilowatt hour credit for the excess generation based on the retail energy rate, these customers significantly reduce their contribution to the recovery of the fixed costs. The recovery of these costs is then shifted to other customers through higher energy rates. These higher energy rates further increases the compensation to the net metering customer. The company is not proposing a similar charge for non-residential customers who are on net metering because the rate structures for these customers typically include demand charges, which provides us recovery of the fixed costs related to the distribution system and customer services. As I've noted, the costs included in the proposed charge are related only to the distribution system and customer services. The calculation of the charge is based on the average cost per residential customer for these services. The distribution system costs are comprised of the substations, the poles, the transformers, the wires, the meters, the service drops. All of this infrastructure is necessary to serve these customers. The customer service costs in the charge are comprised of the cost for meter reading, for billing, for answering and responding to phone calls, customer communications, processing payments, and providing online access to accounts. These costs do not go away with the existence of or the growth in net metering. These distribution and customer service costs are allocated to classes based on essentially three drivers: the contribution to the distribution system peak, the non-coincidental peak, which is the maximum usage for all customers, and by the number of customers. None of these costs are allocated or incurred based on overall energy usage. However, the costs are entirely recovered through energy rates. The current rate structure is heavily dependent on energy rates for recovery of costs and was historically developed for full requirement service. This essentially just means that customers, full requirement services where customers just take all of their service from the utility and are not self-generating as well. The rates, therefore, have been developed for customers with these characteristics of taking all service from the utility. The net metering customers, however, are not similarly situated to the other residential customers because they serve a portion of their usage through their own generation, which is typically solar. These customers have a different load factor and a different load shape than the average residential customer. The proposed net metering charge is essentially designed to ensure that net metering customers pay as much as the average residential customer for the distribution and customer service costs. Even with the proposed charge, nearly 60% of these costs will be recovered through the energy charge, and 100% of the transmission and generation costs will continue to be recovered through the energy charges. So even with the charge, the net metering customers continue to receive a price signal and a significant benefit through their reduced energy use. Ensuring that net metering customers pay at least as much as the average customer is fair because these customers take from our system about the same amount of electricity as the average residential customer, and therefore the distribution infrastructure and the customer services are in place and necessary to serve these customers. And as it was explained by Mr. Marks, the timing of the output of that solar generation does not readily coincide with the timing of the distribution system peaks, which occur over the hours of 4 to 7 p.m., which is when the solar generation is rapidly diminishing. Therefore, the system is still designed to serve that maximum expected usage during the period. However, because the costs are in the energy charges, they are not recovered from the net metering customers commensurate with the demands placed on the distribution system, since they are not billed for their full energy usage, but they are billed just for the energy net of the excess generation. While some parties argue that this reduction in energy is similar to customers who undertake energy efficiency efforts, a net metering customer's avoidance of a kilowatt hour purchase from the grid is not the same as a customer's avoidance of kilowatt hour of consumption via energy efficiency. With energy efficiency, a customer avoids both consumption and the purchase of electricity and generally reduces their consumption at the time of the distribution peak, reduces their maximum peak or their non-quincidental peak, NCP we call it, and improves their load factor. Whereas when a customer adds distributed generation, purchases from the grid may be reduced, but the total consumption may remain unchanged, which the company must be prepared to serve in the event of cloud cover or an outage at the customer's facility. Additionally, the customer's non-quincidental peak may remain relatively unchanged, which can be seen in the diagrams included in my rebuttal testimony, and this non-quincidental peak drives the allocation of many distribution investments, such as the secondary lines and transformers. Several parties have argued that the Commission cannot impose this charge at this time because there is insufficient evidence that the costs exceed the benefits, as required by Senate Bill 208. However, the company believes there is sufficient evidence based on the Commission's own findings about what costs and benefits can be reflected in avoided costs. Mr. Duvall explains this in more detail. However, I will summarize it to say that the avoided cost value for solar is about 3 cents per kilowatt hour in 2015. This compares to the retail energy rate that the net metering customer avoids or is credited with, which ranges from 8.8 cents to 14.4 cents. This results in a gap of about 6 to 11 cents that benefits would have to exceed. So while the company is not opposed to the Commission undertaking a more detailed evaluation of the costs and benefits for net metering, the current gap between the monetary value that customers receive for their generation and the avoided cost value that other solar generators receive is wide enough to support the conclusion that the benefits of customer solar generation, particularly in regards to the distribution system and customer services, they do not exceed the costs, and therefore adoption of the net metering facilities charge at this time is appropriate. The proposed $4.65 per month translates to less than 1 cent per kilowatt hour in closing that gap of 6 to 11 cents. The company believes it's important to adopt this charge now. While the number of impacted customers remains small, but it is growing, and the level of cost shifted to other customers is small. The company is planning to continue to study the impacts on the system and on allocations due to customer generation and may propose additional changes in rates in the future. However, this additional data is not necessary to support the proposed change at this time, because these costs, which are limited to distribution system and customer services, are supported by cost causation, and it is therefore is reasonable to adopt it at this time. And that concludes my summary.
Ms. Stewart is available for cross-examination.
No questions from the division. Thank you.
The office has no questions. Thank you.
Mr. Rossetti.
Thank you. First of all, thank you for responding to all of our data requests.
You're welcome.
I do have a couple of questions. Well, more than that, I suppose. Let's see how it goes. Would you please briefly summarize the factors that have been used to determine the 465 charge? And feel free to skip over the elements contributing to the total distribution retail costs. So in your spreadsheet, you show a number of factors such as kilowatt hours and that?
Correct. So essentially what we did is we calculated the average cost per customer for all of these facilities, for the distribution facilities and for customer service costs. We subtracted out the revenue we'll collect through the $6 customer charge. The remaining amount translates to $162 million or $18.19 per customer that we would need to recover through the energy charges. That's $162 million, if you take it over the total kilowatt hours, becomes 2.6 cents per kilowatt hour in all energy rates. It recovers the distribution and customer service costs. So we then took that, applied to the energy, forecast energy, net billed energy we would receive from net metering customers to determine what the deficiency is that net metering customers would not be paying compared to the other residential customers.
Okay, thank you. So what would you ask for to completely recover the fixed cost? I believe in your testimony you said that this doesn't recover at all, but it recovers a certain portion of it. Was that correct?
Correct, because we still assume that we're getting recovery of a portion of these costs through the energy usage that is being billed to net metering customers. So we've not tried to double count. We've tried to take into account that we will be getting recovery through some energy charges, but not enough.
Is there any intention to increase that in the future to more fully recover the fixed charges?
Well, what we're looking to do in the future is actually possibly propose a new rate design, rate structure mechanism that may be better suited to these customers and this type of service. And that mechanism could more closely resemble a non-residential customer where there is a demand charge in addition to an energy charge and the regular customer charge. And that structure may actually help capture both the benefits and the costs more fairly for these customers, because that demand charge could be based on the time of the distribution peak, and the energy charges could be based on time of day. So if these customers are offsetting their usage during a higher price period but taking usage during a lower price period, that would all be captured through a more refined rate design.
Okay, thank you. Would you please repeat the definition of line 11, the net metering kilowatt hours? What does that represent?
This represents the forecast for the net billed kilowatt hours for the net metering customers.
Thank you. Are there any fixed costs recovered from net metering customers currently?
Yes.
Okay. And that is recovered from the portion of the gross minus the excess, is that correct?
Well, it'd be recovered through both the customer charge, which is currently $5, and through some portion of their energy usage.
Great. Just wanted to be clear on that. What is the percentage of total consumption? Let me make sure I say this right, because I can't read my writing because I'm nervous. What percentage of total consumption does net metering excess represent, say today or at the end of the study period, June of 2013, whichever you prefer?
Well, I know that the excess generation, if I'm understanding you correctly, of what their usage was essentially netted against, was about 161 kilowatt hours on average per customer. So while their net billed usage is, I think it was about 511, once you take into account that usage that was excess generation that can be applied, later in the billing period or even carried forward into other months,
they actually approach more of a average residential customer.
Okay. Why is gross consumption used as the basis for the net metering fixed cost calculation?
Gross consumption is not used. Gross consumption for whom? For which line?
On line 11.
That's the net amount. So that's not a gross number. That's a net.
Okay. In, I hope it's okay to say this, but in one of the rebuttals or in the rebuttal to my testimony, I was told that that represented the gross consumption by the customer, not the net production. And that actually coincides with the numbers provided in other exhibits from the company.
I believe we maybe have a misunderstanding of terminology. This is the amount of energy they took from the company net of any excess. This is what we would bill on. And if you could point me to where you're...
Yes, I'm scampering here. If anyone else sees it, let me know.
Let's be off the record.
Please.
Actually, I have found it. It's in my rebuttal on line 352.
Just a moment.
Oh, I'm sorry.
On the record.
I think the line you're referring to is on line 352 in my rebuttal, and it says instead the $13 million in kilowatt hour is the annual net billed usage by the net metering customers.
Okay, so the net billed usage.
Correct.
Not the net excess generation?
Right, it does not include that excess generation.
Okay, I'm struggling to understand this.
Do you need a minute, Mr. Rossetti, to look through your papers?
Oh, a month or two would help.
We can go off the record if you...
I'll think about it for a minute.
Okay.
Okay. Is wear and tear and requirement system modifications due to net metering relevant to the establishment of a facilities charge?
We have not, as part of the calculation of this charge, assumed any additional costs related to these customers. But I think in looking at costs and benefits, you want to consider that there are additional costs related. But we have not even tried to capture those costs for net metering. This is just a charge to try to have the net metering customers pay the same as the average residential customer for the same facilities.
Okay. It's been used in some justification. Let's see. Would you say that the average residential net metering customer's excess perfectly offsets their grid consumption?
No.
What has been the growth in residential net metering excess generation put back into the grid, which I think you're calling net metering kilowatt hours, since your original testimony was filed? In percentage, do you have a rough idea?
No, I don't know what the net usage change has been.
How about capacity change?
You mean how many new installations have been in place?
Well, the capacity of the new installations.
I know it succeeded. I know we've responded to data responses that provided that information, but I don't know it off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere around 30% was the claim. And then I might as well not ask what percentage of the total gross consumption this represents. Do you have any idea what the net metered production, meaning the outflow from a residential customer, represents for total residential consumption going into the meter for all customers, residential customers? Do you know what percentage that is?
I'm not sure I followed that. Could you ask it again?
For all the solar or net metering customers who generate excess, mm-hmm. the total of that excess compared to the total consumption by all residential customers. So the total kilowatt hours in here is 6,203,000.
Oh, what the total? No, but if we take that
at $6 billion and divided by the $13 million?
Well, if we take the $13 million, let's see if I'm following you here, we know that $13 million does not take into account the excess generation. And I know through the data we've provided in data responses that that excess generation is about 161 kilowatt hours per customer. So if you take that by the number of customers, we could get there, but I can't do it on the top of my without a calculator.
They're handy. Okay. So if you will bear with me, let's say I don't know. Can I ask what ifs in this?
You can ask what ifs as long as you're clear about doing it.
Okay. I have a couple of what ifs. What if a customer has solar? They consume 1,400 kilowatt hours in a month. They generate 700 kilowatt hours of excess, which means they get billed for 700 kilowatt hours. That's the break-even point, right? That's the average customer consumption of 700 kilowatt hours.
Did you say they use 1,400?
They use 1,400.
From the utility, not just what's offset by their generation at the time of the generation?
They sucked in through the power lines 1,400 kilowatt hours. And they pushed out 700, but they were billed for 700 because they got credit for the 700. So is that the break-even point? At that point, have they paid the average fixed cost recovery?
Yeah. So about 700 kilowatt hours is the average customer.
Okay.
But then that customer would clearly be above average.
Okay. If somebody consumes 700 kilowatt hours from the grid, sucks it out of the power lines, but they don't generate any excess, they just have a few panels, and they never generate excess, how much of that customer has not paid their fair share? They've consumed 700 kilowatt hours.
Mm-hmm.
How much has that customer not paid their fair share of the fixed costs at that point?
Well, if they've paid for 700 kilowatt hours, then they've paid about the same as an average residential customer towards fixed costs.
Would we call that fair? I'm sorry, that's probably not an appropriate question. Thank you for bearing with me. My final case study here. Instead of solar, this customer uses aggressive conservation and efficiency techniques and reduces their consumption to 700 kilowatt hours. This customer has paid their fair share too. They have paid their average fixed cost for all residential customers.
They've paid the same as an average residential customer, yes.
Thank you. I'm probably never gonna get back to that kilowatt hour thing. And then, let's see, in your testimony, this is the rebuttal testimony on line 196. You were asked a question about...
Hold on, let me get there.
Okay, sorry. I had a sticky tab on.
Okay.
All right. In response to the question, is net metering similar to customers who use efficiency? And you say a net metering customer's avoidance of a kilowatt hour purchase from the grid is not the same as a residential customer's permanent avoidance of a kilowatt hour of consumption via energy efficiency or demand side management. When a residential customer adopts energy efficient appliances or behaviors, both energy consumption and energy purchase from the grid are reduced. They also reduce energy consumption at the time of system peak. Reading that, it sounds to me like the only difference is peak demand. The solar customer has reduced consumption, so has the conserver, but is it correct that in the context of this statement here, that you're saying that the real only difference is in peak demand?
No, you actually didn't continue reading on through the rest of that sentence, which says improving load shape. So those energy efficient customers are improving their load shape and load factor, and ultimately the class and system load factor.
Which is related to peak demand, isn't that correct?
Well, it relates to how peaky they are and how costly it is to serve a peaky customer. So a customer with distributed generation, they're going to be much more peaky in their use, which ultimately costs the utility more. It's a less efficient use of the system. Whereas an energy efficient customer, they flatten their load better, and so it's a higher load factor, and it's less costly for the utility to serve.
Okay, thank you. Has that been monetized?
I don't know what.
Well, I mean, has the value of that?
Well, we calculated. We show there the difference in diagram A and B. I show the difference in the load factors between an average residential customer and a DG customer. We did not show it on an exhibit or on diagram C.
Okay.
That load factor.
Thank you. So there's no dollar figure been associated with that benefit of conservation?
No. Not that I have here, no.
Okay. Just trying to figure out how I'm different from the conserver. Okay. And then hopefully this will be my final question. And I do have, if I figure out my question about the kilowatt hours later, is there any way I can ask that question later?
Yes. Your timing's impeccable. We're going to break for lunch, and you can consider how to frame that question over lunch. As soon as you've asked this one, we'll break for lunch until 1:30.
Okay, thank you. UCARE argues that there, this is in your rebuttal testimony, line 327.
Okay.
UCARE argues there is a considerable financial benefit realized by the company as a result of the excess generation being used to serve a net metering customer's neighbor and through the expiration of the excess credits at the end of the program year. Do you agree? Your answer is no. The argument overlooks the fact that the cost of those neighboring customers for that non-dispatchable energy is between 8.8 whatever cents and is considerably higher than the customer's avoided cost of energy. Emphasis, since that rate includes fixed costs, that neighbor essentially ends up paying for the fixed costs required to serve the net metering customer that the net metering customer does not pay by virtue of the rate structure. Does that not mean that the neighbor who has not used the utility to get that energy has paid for the fixed costs for the credit that is later redeemed by the net metering customer?
Well, that net metering customer, and I don't know if I'm answering this exactly, if I followed your question correctly, that net metering customer is essentially banking their usage because they're going to take it at a later period through the crediting process. And so that the neighbor is paying for their usage as they would any other way, but because of that crediting process and that we're only billing on the net and not the total usage, those costs end up getting shifted through higher energy rates to all customers because our net amount that we bill on is different than what is actually required to serve customers. Did
okay,
that answer
but
it,
not really. The point I'm trying to understand is here we've meaning the company has tried to justify charging the or recovering the fixed cost because when the solar customer later uses the network, the grid, for redeeming those credits, they're not paying anything. Is that correct?
That's okay. That is correct, yes.
The neighbor who received the excess energy paid fixed costs, mm-hmm. but they were not actually pulling energy across the network. So if we're talking about actual usage of the grid as a justification, doesn't this wash?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll be in recess until 1:30. Thank you very much.
Oh, you know my point.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Yeah. It's making me think about it.
I'm looking at my extended think about it. Can you just go take a nap?
Hi.
I know.
Well, I'm saying, rest of us. That's why we're going to
law school. That's right.
That's what you're
helpful. Yeah. And you put it together. Yeah.
But yeah, it's.
I couldn't figure out how to do that.
Totally. No, totally. It's crazy. It's crazy hard.
I got on to Yvonne.